We're talking about soft answers to tough questions. The tough questions of world gods. It dawned on me that we kind of get off, you know, we're kind of looking at what those other people are saying. But we are tempted, even as Christians, to give in to the idols of the world. And tonight we want to talk about the love, sex, romance as a surface idol. And we'll be looking at Genesis 29. It occurs to me that perhaps there is a question why we would go to the Old Testament to learn these things. Psalm 19:7 says, "The law," the King James margin says, "or doctrine, of the Lord is perfect, converting or restoring the soul." Just a minute to think about that. The law, the first five books of the Bible, God laying down his law, this is perfect. Complete, and it is for the converting or the restoring of your soul, the mind, the will, the emotions, strengthening these things. And then he says, "The testimony of the Lord is pure, is sure, making wise the simple." Now, the testimonies are also found in the law, that also everywhere else that there's a history. The testimonies are the life pattern of these people. Sometimes we read these stories and we say, wait a minute, who's the spiritual hero here? I don't see any goodness to follow here, no champion for me to emulate. No, this is a picture of people's lives as they really are, and for the most part, a cosmic failure. But it's those testimonies. And these are sure. They have been recorded not by Google-eyed men who are awestruck by the ancestry and by the history and by the wealth or whatever. Recorded by God to say this is what was going on. Again, Isaiah 8:20, "To the law and to the testimony, if they speak not according to this word, it is because there is no light and literally no morning in them." They're still in the dark, in the night. It hasn't dawned. Love, sex, romance. Organized crime is built on prostitution, pornography, $1 billion a year business. Perhaps my wife is catching me up on the Subway Jared guy. You know, these things are just available for whoever would care to put his hand to it. And then the songwriter declares, "You're nobody till somebody loves you." Your being anything depends on that. Another sings that his new love will need me too much, know me too well, pull me up short, and put me through a really difficult time. I spelled that wrong. Yeah, put me through. Okay, I didn't correct it here. Another, admitting that she has fallen in love badly, sings, "I'm wild again, beguiled again, a simpering, whimpering child again." It's this falling in love thing, this romance thing that sweeps people up and says, yes, this is what gives meaning to life. And when they do that, it is, in fact, making an idol of it because it is expecting something from that relationship that only God can give. It's fairly simple for us to point out the evils of sex. You know, we get stirred up about various things, but it comes down to this, that there's only one right way for the sexual relationship as God made it. That's between husband and wife, and that's it. Everything else is wrong. Everything else is wrong. Every other use of sex is wrong. So the problem isn't just sex. It is what sex represents. It is that this makes me something. This ties me to something. This makes me greater than self. Reading about the Egyptian tendency to build these great posts and so on, it ends up that these were all monuments to sexual power. The idea of being the one who can bring about babies and this type of thing was power. So today many are enslaved to the idol of love, sex, romance. Various parts of each of those. God has given us these beautiful gifts, but man has made an idol of them. We have a tragic but illuminating example found in the story of Jacob and Leah in Genesis 29. I have here a little-known photograph of Jacob. Maybe not quite what you had expected. But we picked this up, and Jacob was broken and empty. He deceived his father to get family blessing and then lost his family. He would never see his father and mother alive again. He so angered his brother that he had to leave everything. So he got the inheritance and then had to abandon it. He had to flee to a foreign land, seek refuge with his mother's family. So his life is empty. He's a refugee. He never had his father's love. He had no sense of God's love. He finally pinned his hope of meaning, of being somebody, on marrying his employer's daughter, the gorgeous Rachel. Laban also had another daughter named Leah. Notice Genesis 29, 16, 17. Laban had two daughters. The name of the elder was Leah, and the name of the younger was Rachel. Here's the description. Leah was tender-eyed, but Rachel was beautiful and well-favored. So the daughters are contrasted. Now, Leah's eyes are called tender. Now, the word can mean tender, soft, delicate, or weak. It doesn't just mean she had beautiful, soft eyes. It probably means weak, because we see that it does not say Leah was weak-eyed, but Rachel had perfect vision. This doesn't seem to be the emphasis of weak or tender eyes. There was something unattractive about her face. Rachel, however, was beautiful and well-favored. The word beautiful actually translates two words, beautiful and form. This is the way she was made. Well-favored, I don't know what was beautiful then. Maybe that was beautiful. Maybe that was wonderful. I don't know. Well-favored translates two words. Beautiful, the same word as before, but the second word is appearance. So in form and face, she was beautiful. When, yes?
The well-favored cattle that came up out of the river were fat and slim.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, and in a lot of cultures, a heavier woman is considered far more attractive than the skinny people that Americans often look to. When Laban received his refugee, Jacob had told him all that had happened. I tend to think that Laban understood this and said, then he's needy, and I have some power over him. We read in Genesis 29, 12 and 13. Jacob told, he meets Rachel, told Rachel that he was her father's brother, that he was Rebekah's son. She ran and told her father. It came to pass when Laban heard the tidings, literally the hearing, of Jacob, his sister's son, that he ran to meet him and embraced him and kissed him and brought him to the house And he told Laban all these things. So, you know, here's a broken man. He's sad. He's family. He's had to abandon his family for his very life safety. And he pours out his heart to this man. But he was something of a conniver that we find in the way going on. But we won't get into all of that. So he signed on as a helper with the flocks. I believe that Laban recognized a man of talent and offered him the job of manager. Genesis 29:15, Laban said unto Jacob, because thou art my brother, shouldest thou serve me for naught? Tell me, what shall thy wages be? Well, Genesis 29:18, Jacob loved Rachel and said, I will serve thee 7 years for Rachel, thy younger daughter. There is indications in this that Jacob was desperately lovesick. He offered an enormous price for her. One estimate is 4 times what other people would offer. I mean, he came without a bank account, you know. So to work it off was right. But to say 7 years, it's amazing. But that meant nothing for him. He was so focused on her. In verse 20, Jacob served 7 years for Rachel, and they seemed unto him but a few days for the love he had to her. Now he had jumped to the conclusion that he and Laban were on the same page with this deal. But Laban had been careful in his answer. I'm going to give you the verse and then my interpretation. Verse 19, Laban said, it's better that I give her to thee than that I should give her to another man. Abide with me. My interpretation is, oi, better you than some other schmuck. This doesn't exactly sound like, okay, it's a deal. It's like, better you. I think we see here that she became his reason to live. He was convinced that if he had her, it would fix his life. She became his idol. Notice how crudely he asks for her hand in marriage in verse 21. Jacob said unto Laban, give me my wife, for my days are fulfilled, that I may go in unto her. Pretty crass. Pay up. I want her in bed. So that night, his heavily veiled wife is brought to him, and they unite in the darkness. His dreams had come true. He was in heaven. He had Rachel. Little known photograph of Rachel. Then he woke up. First part of verse 25. It came to pass that in the morning, behold, it was Leah. A lot of these idols end up a Leah. You know that? When he complained, Laban answered, oh, sorry, I thought you knew our marriage customs. And then he cleverly adds, fulfill her week, and we will give thee also for the service which thou shalt serve me yet another 7 years. Laban was a conniver. People that smoke pipes are usually conniving people. So I want you for a moment to consider Leah. She had been given away by trickery. That can't be good. She was openly rejected by her husband. So she determined to win his love and his romance by having children. Look with me at verses 31 to 34. And when the Lord saw that Leah was hated, he opened her womb. But Rachel was barren. And Leah conceived and bare a son, and she called his name Reuben, that is, see a son. For she said, Surely the Lord hath looked upon my affliction. Now therefore will my husband will love me. She knew she was not loved. She saw it as an affliction. And she conceived again and bare a son and said, because the Lord hath heard that I was hated, he hath therefore given me this son also. And she called his name Simeon, that is hearing, because God heard. And she conceived again and bare a son and said, now this time will my husband be joined unto me. She was not talking about physical relationship. They seemed to be having plenty of that. But he was not joined. Because I have borne him three sons, therefore was his name called Levi, that is joined. The hope of this poor woman for a joining. Each, yes?
He was wanting to know if those were really those people.
No, just my imagination. Here with Leah, each child was another hope for acceptance. You see, the love relationship for her also was something that would mean she could strut down the path with a loving husband, you see. But I want you to notice that after this came her victory. In verse 35, and she conceived again and bare a son, and she said, now will I praise the Lord. Therefore she called his name Judah, that is praise, and left bearing. The Hebrew stood from bearing. Now I will praise the Lord. And God praised her. With that victory, he gave her the one who would be in the line of the Messiah. Christ was born of the line of Judah. So let me emphasize the deeper idols here. These are the wrong idols inside that give rise to making a surface idol of love, sex, and romance. Worshipping the creature rather than the creator is idolatry. No matter how frilly and sentimental we make all this love, sex, romance, no human relationship can bear the burden of Godhead. It's too much. You may idolize the loved one, but the loved one is still flawed, given to earthly decay. That Godhead will fail because you're expecting too much. You will crush the person with your expectations. What do you want out of me? No one can give your soul all that it needs except God himself. What do we do? How do we fix this? How do we turn from this idol? Well, turn to the true bridegroom. Just as we were singing about feeding us, fill my cup, Lord, hungers that cannot be satisfied. So he has set before us this relationship. Turn to the true bridegroom. Remember that he came for you and was rejected. He was Leah's son. He gave himself in love and asked to be loved, but his own received him not. Received him not. Isaiah 53, the second part of the verse 2. He hath no form nor comeliness. And when we shall see him, there is no beauty that we should desire him. So learn to turn to him with all of the expectations of a love relationship. Psalm 53:25. Whom have I in heaven but thee? and there is none upon earth that I desire beside thee. You say, well, am I not supposed to love anyone else? You see, the way this works is, at this point, when you love him as God, you take your meaning from that relationship. Then you will be free to love one another selflessly. This idolatry of the love relationship demands from the other person. And it demands too much. Make that relationship with God, and you now can be fulfilled, be filled with God's love, and then love others selflessly. Comments or questions?